C-167. Number 5B.
So that second part shows us how we can uncover if a phenomena or if phenomena are real or unreal. And under real, we always understand only what is spiritual, because only the spiritual is real. Or if the phenomena only seems to be real from the point of view of human belief, then they are unreal. And this is what it shows you. It's a healing that takes place in the body, a proof of spiritual reality or not. Has it a spiritual value or not? It's a healing. The body has changed. Sickness has been turned into health, into a feeling of health. The symptoms have changed. Now, what kind of healing is that? You can say it's healing. Yes, but what kind? Is it the healing in the realm of the real, or is it the healing in the realm of belief? Therefore, we always have to go back to the noumenon and say, from where does a phenomena come from? And only if we go back to the noumenon, we can uncover if it's actually in the realm of reality or if it's only in the realm of belief. If that healing can be traced back, say, to willpower, then we know it is not reality. If we can trace back that healing, the very same healing and phenomena, back to the divine mind, that the divine mind was at work, we can say this healing is in the realm of reality. She takes a second example at spirit, where we see that the science of mind derives its strength from the apprehension of truth, whereas spiritualism derives its strength from mysticism. She takes there over a whole page the phenomena called strength, and shows that strength as such doesn't tell us that it is a positive sense of strength or a negative sense of strength. It says only if we go back and say, from where did we get it? Did we get it from a cup of coffee or a cup of tea? Then she says, then it is not really true strength. Then it is a belief in strength. If that strength goes back to table tipping, to mysticism, if it goes back to spiritualistic phenomena, to telekinesis, to back to human willpower, then it is not a really a phenomena of reality. Only if through spiritual means we can bring forth health, strength, then only then is it a true phenomena. Can you see, all through this seven now goes the question of uncovering if a phenomena that we have, if it is real or unreal. The phenomena itself doesn't tell us. The phenomena doesn't tell us anything, not anything. We have to trace it back to its source. So she takes up a third instance, namely immortality, and says, well, the spiritualist proved to you immortality through the mediums, through spiritualistic mediums. I can put the dead into communication with those who are left behind. Those who are dead say, I'm not death, I still live and I still am alive. So spiritualism says, we can prove immortality. Now that's a proof that the belief universe, that belief universe is actually nothing else but the belief. And it's therefore a phenomena in the realm of belief, but not of spirituality. Whereas Christian Science says, we also have the idea of immortality, but that phenomena of immortality we get from another noumenon, not from departed spirits, not from mediums, spiritualistic mediums. We get it from the understanding that God, soul, is immortal. We derive really immortality of man from the immortality of God. And that's much easier. That's much more logic. It's just a deduction that says God is soul and God is immortal, therefore man cannot help but to be immortal. That's our proof. We don't need the proof of a spirit or a ghost. Or she comes to a very interesting subject in principle, to mind reading, where we said in Christian Science, divine mind reading is based on the divine principle, whereas in spiritualism, mortal mind reading is based on human belief. So both with the divine mind, we can read a situation. We can also read a situation in the belief universe through mortal mind reading. So mortal mind reading can read what is happening within the realm of mortal mind, either present or past or even future. It can read the realm of mortal mind. But mortal mind reading can never read reality, can never say anything about our true spiritual reality, about our true immortal reality. Only the divine mind reading can express anything that is true and real about the situation. So just being able to read thought is no proof that reading thought is divine. It's just a phenomena that can be brought about through the divine mind, and it also can be brought out through mortal mind. But the quality is different. The quality is absolutely different. Divine mind reading only reads that which is in the realm of reality and only reads that which is good. Whereas mortal mind reading reads that which is in the realm of belief, of the belief universe. And that can be good and evil. Then we come to a fifth subject, which is very short in the textbook. Spiritualism brings forth its phenomena through mortal mentality. It's all about bringing forth new phenomena, where life, as the newness of life, can bring forth new phenomena, can bring us new ideas, can bring us new insight, can reveal itself to us, so that there is newness of life there. But the mortal mind also can project its own beliefs. And that's what happens with all those ghosts and spirits that wander around and bring about their own phenomena. It's mortal mind that produces them. They are not phenomena of reality. They are not phenomena which the divine mind has produced. So again and again, or you come to truth, there again it is shown really that there is consciousness reading from two standpoints, from the standpoint of truth or from the standpoint of belief. She says, in Christian Science, mental images can always be called back to consciousness. Everything that has been thought, that has been lived, that has been experienced in the past can always be brought back to consciousness, because everything that happened in the past was happening in the realm of belief, not in the realm of reality, because reality has no past. So everything that has happened in the atmosphere of belief brought back to consciousness, because they still exist in the general atmosphere of belief. Whereas spiritualism can never become conscious of true reality. That's something we have to remember, that somebody in trance or as a medium can only read the world of beliefs, the belief world, the belief universe, and can read it very well. Can go right back to thousands of years and can read the realm of belief. But it can never read reality, spiritual reality. For that we need the consciousness of truth and not the absent-mindedness of the human mind. But finally, we have that example again in love, where Mrs. Eddy takes up a miracle, so to say, the wonders, a wonder that seems to be something that happens outside the general law and order, and says, what are really wonders? And so, again, she makes a difference. In Christian Science, only divine mind and its ideas can produce wonders, real wonders, whereas the so-called wonders of spiritualism are only illusions and delusions. You remember she takes that example of somebody to become suddenly eloquent and says that eloquency can have many different causes. It can come from scholarly attainment. It can come really from a spiritualistic influence, that in a spiritualistic trance people become very eloquent who were otherwise not eloquent. Or she says, but you also can become eloquent through God, through love, that love can bring forth wonders. That's possible. So just to say, well, a wonder happened, and it was just like a wonder what happened, we have to be very careful that we don't associate at once the term wonder with God. That wonder has anything to do with God. It can have to do a lot with mortal mind, with a lot to do with willpower, a lot to do with spiritualism, a lot to do with hypnotic influence. All that is possible. So, again and again, you see that whole second part shows don't read from the phenomena. Read always from the noumenon. If you want to know if an experience or if something that happens is from God or is not from God. Therefore, at the end of that part is that terrific question which says, how can we distinguish ideas from illusion? A question that every scientist asks. And she has a very... Let's go back to its origin. If it comes from the divine mind, then it's an idea. If it doesn't come from the divine mind, then it is an illusion. So, all through that second part, she just gave first the examples and examples and examples, not to read from phenomena, and then at the end, she gives really a very clear method how to know when something is an idea and when something is an illusion. So that's the second part. Yes. Then comes the third part, and that third part must be understood in its logical sequence. See, what is now the logical sequence when we have had the first and second part? Again, we go through that sequence. The first part is first just to state what being is. And that whatever is not of the nature of being or of beingness is not. Then comes the second part and says, but that's not so easy as it looks like, because I always see wonderful phenomena happen. So how can I know that something which happens is of the nature of identity of being and therefore real? And I'm not fooled into thinking that they are real when they actually are not real. How can I distinguish between ideas and illusion? The first part said, all that there exists is God and his ideas. How can I know in a certain situation that something is of the nature of idea and not of its opposite nature, illusion? Answer, go back to its origin, then you know it. So the second part gives us the method how to know which one is true and which one is untrue, which one is real, which one is unreal. Now, what do we do when we have come to that point where we see that something is either real or unreal? Then the third step is always that we say, well, then I devote myself completely to that which I found out to be real and not to that which is unreal. Now I know what is real and what is unreal, so now I put everything into the balance of the real. And that's the third part. Now in the third part we find out now how to find out the final spiritualization of things. Having seen now in the second part what is real, therefore spiritual, I can now put everything into the scale of the spiritual and see step by step how to work out the final spiritualization. That's why the tone is spirit and love, spirit as spiritualization, love as coming to a fulfillment, the spiritualization coming to a fulfillment. So we state that there in the third part, scientific understanding leads to the final spiritualization of all things, so that we arrive really at the fulfillment of what the whole chapter is all about. How? And she gives an order of 7 steps how we can arrive at the final spiritualization. The very first point is, which she brings up here, is to show mind, namely that we have to accept from the standpoint of divine mind, really, that man is actually already God's own image and likeness. We have that very important sentence as the first sentence of that third part, which says the admission to oneself. So we have first to admit to ourselves something. Then we have to claim something for ourselves. What? The right standpoint. Namely, to admit to oneself that man is what? That man is not man the way we think man is, but is God's own likeness. It's not just God's likeness, it's God's own likeness. We can see that God has an idea of himself, has an image and likeness of himself. So that God says, I never let man go, it's my own. And you can see that it gives a much better sense of the unity of God and man, and not just saying man is the likeness of God, and you see God somewhere, and then somewhere else the likeness, but it says it's my own likeness. So, showing you should go out from the noumenon of everything, namely from the divine mind, and see only that what mind knows about itself is actually man, is actually of the same likeness, of the same nature as God. So we begin really first to recognize ourselves as God's own idea. Then in the second subject of spirit, she said that spiritualization is furthered by our denying that matter is a part of man. So first it is an acknowledgement, an admittance that man is God's own likeness, therefore spiritual. Consequently, the second subject says, therefore the material concept of man is unreal, and therefore my admission must be to acknowledge and deny really the unreality of matter, and deny that that matter can be real, and that again strengthens my spiritual sense of the universe. Third, we have a typical sense of soul that deals with the serpent, that deals with suggestion, with the opposite suggestion, namely that spiritualization becomes a present possibility when we reject the knowledge of good and evil, when we reject the whisper of the serpent that both may be right, that both can be right, that these phenomena which have been shown in the second part can be real, no matter what is the cause, no matter if they come from God or if they come from a drug, as long as it heals, it doesn't matter. So that the phenomena can be good and evil just the same. And this must be rejected and seen. That's the suggestion of the serpent. That's the suggestion of the tree of knowledge of good and evil. It can only have one thing as real, and that is the spiritual. So that she says that therefore when you say, well, man is beautiful and he has something that nobody really can produce, that must be a creation of God, she says, no, it's a burlesque on God's man. That's all that there is about the mortal man. Just a burlesque on God's man. Don't be fooled by the beauty and by the of nature. We say, well, nature is so beautiful. It's actually, when one looks at nature, every bird is so beautiful, every animal is so beautiful, every tree is so beautiful, every flower is so beautiful. We are living in a beautiful material universe. Nobody could really think this out. Nobody could think out and make these wonderful fish with all those wonderful colors and so on. Who could think it out? Because we can't think it out, it must have been God. That's the reasoning. What we can't think out, we just put into God's lap. Without really thinking over the whole issue and say, well, it is in the realm of belief, and the realm of belief has no limits. That realm of belief has actually unlimited imagination, illusions. And so all these things that we can't produce and can't make ourselves, we attribute to God. That's an easy way out. Instead of saying, oh, only that which is from God is real. If it is of the nature of a matter or of body, it can't be real. It must be a burlesque, it must be a counterfeit, it must be a simulation of God's creation. Or you come to principle and you say in principle that spiritualization demands that we should reason scientifically from God so as to arrive at the spiritual concept of man. Here she turns now the subject and says, look here, now the next thing you have to see is that you always reason from God. Never otherwise. Never reason from belief, never reason from phenomena, reason from the divine principle. Then, if you do that, then you have life. Namely, spiritualization enables us to father the universe spiritually. There she takes up the subject of divine mind reading again and says, if we go out from divine mind reading, therefore from the noumenon, then that divine mind reading can only be a help to the universe. You can never harm the universe with divine mind reading. You can harm the universe by mortal mind reading, because mortal mind reading makes a reality of belief. Makes a reality of belief. So that the belief universe becomes real to us, we accept it as identities of being, as something that existed at one time, at one place, and she says, no, that's not true. Only that which is projected out from the divine mind is real, and that can only be good, never harm anything. Whereas mortal mind reading can harm people very much if they are not awake to it. Finally, the sixth subject is truth, that through conscious spiritualization, the end of error is brought about. Now we come nearer and nearer really to the climax and says, well, if we entertain the spiritual consciousness of truth, then erroneous consciousness has no room within ourselves. And it is here that she depicts actually our present age and shows how at this moment really that battle goes on between the spiritual consciousness and the material consciousness. That now the whole human family goes through a crisis, that we have interruptions of the general material routine, that the material world becomes the arena of conflicting forces, that beliefs are changeable, but understanding is not changeable. Understanding cannot go through a crisis. It's always showing that really that if we stick to the spiritual consciousness, then we have no knowledge of the erroneous consciousness, and therefore we can interpret the erroneous consciousness and the crisis and the conflicts and the warfare that goes on rightly, and see what that actually behind that crisis, something positive, something real, is at work, and not actually the Antichrist. And finally, now it's final, love says, final spiritualization is possible through the union of Christianity with science. Here she sees the solution, that she says, we shouldn't have two departments of consciousness. One department of consciousness is engaged in religion that has to do with the spiritual, and the other part is engaged with the material, with scientific investigation. So that science and religion were over centuries of enemies, that they never converged, that they were always opposite, and that men lived actually in a state of dualism, in a state of schizophrenia, be one moment a religionist on the Sunday and believing in God, on Monday going to the factory and being a physicist and investigating matter as substance. That's not being a whole man. We have to wed really the spiritual side of man with the scientific side of man and see that there is only one science, namely a spiritual science that includes religion and science, that includes Christianity and science. And this is, as we see today, perhaps the main issue that we have to face, namely how to wed religion to science, or how to wed science, perhaps even more, to Christianity. So these are the main tones in the third part. Yes. Okay. Tomorrow we'll take this chart again. And we will read it now, then tomorrow, horizontally instead of vertically. And we see for what purpose. Yeah. So take this chart with you again tomorrow.